103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is June 30th, 2019. If you're not listening to us on June 30th, then this is a rebroadcast or a podcast. I'm Dotter Five, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone. Hello, Wombat.
Hello, it's the Wombat. I'm ready to go. It's a brand new week. Let's get ready. I'm excited.
Very cool. We also have a guest for the show today, whenever possible. Is that correct?
Gwen Possible. Gwen Possible, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
I'm doing good.
Sounds real good. Good.
Digital
Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for over 9 years now? Did you know that, Wombat?
Dude, I love it. I've been playing that since I was a little kid. I like the fact that you can save the princess in every game, but I hate the fact that you crush turtles by jumping on them.
It's not a turtles game.
No, what are you talking about then? I'm confused.
It's a TV show where a couple of atheists sit in front of the camera, answer questions from the audience, and have topics that they go over during each show. And like I said, we'll talk about all this after the mid-show break, but that's an atheist TV show been broadcasting in Knoxville for over 9 years. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as we have them in rotation. Today's topic is souls.
Oh, Larry's excited. This is your favorite topic.
Can you tell already?
I can tell. Before we do that, before we get into it, how about we introduce, properly introduce our guest, Gwen
sure.
Possible. Gwen, what's your whole deal?
Hello.
You're a cool person I met on Discord a couple of days ago, and thank you for coming on the show. Who are you? What do you want to share?
Well, I guess I could just share that I'm an artist.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
I am deaf.
You are? That's awesome. I love sign language. My mom's deaf, and I got a deaf cousin, too. So, yeah, it's a popular thing, apparently.
Well, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah.
What's your artistic medium, if you don't mind me asking?
I prefer Indian ink or a pencil.
Oh, very cool.
So black and white.
Yeah. So we've had a lot of different kinds of people on the show so far. Normally what I like to throw out is like a confidence scale, if you ever heard of that before. But it's like, if you were like to say 0%, you don't believe in any God, or you know no gods exist, absolutely confident, zero chance of any God, 100%. 100% confident that there is a God, like, where do you find yourself on that scale? Personally, I'm, like, around maybe 50. But, like, if it's, like, a specific God, I could be as low as, like, a 2%. I could be really, really low on that scale. I think Larry could be low or in the same situation, too. Where do you find yourself, if you don't mind me asking?
I'd say somewhere in the 1% range.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, she's throwing it down. Hammers on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you say, are you familiar with the term atheist?
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
Do you find that you identify with that label, or what does that mean to you? What does it mean to you if you were an atheist?
Well, I define myself as an atheist, and it is about what I believe and not about what I know.
Oh, interesting. So, right. I like it. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in good
so
company.
So I just...
We're
don't believe
agnostic atheists.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I know that definition, so you can add me to the camp.
Aren't you afraid of going to the bad place when you die, though?
I don't have that fear. And also, one of the things that's great is that regardless of the fact that I was brought up around Christianity heavily... Hmm. I was never indoctrinated. Basically, the indoctrination didn't take. So, yeah.
I also heard something kind of interesting. I hope you don't mind me if I can share this, but like it's not just that you weren't indoctrinated, but you have like incredibly connected religious people in like the church. Like you have family members that are bishops and stuff like that, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow. So imagine Gwen Possible sitting there on the pew, listening to her uncle slash grandfather. Was it your grandfather that was the bishop?
Yes, my grandfather was the bishop.
Watching them at the pew being like, okay, I'm just waiting for him to stop talking. I get it. Yeah. Sacrament.
It's not really about waiting for him to stop talking. It's about, wow, that's really interesting that he believes these things.
Wow.
And how he applies that to his life and how he applies that to lessons. And I'm going to parse that and say, what does apply for me that has nothing to do with the supernatural?
Right. Mm. Yes. Yeah. Mm. There are lessons even in like Shakespeare, which is like pure fiction. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are lessons you can take from anything, even a Spider-Man comic book, if you look for, you know, truth and pertinency, as it were.
I was almost about to get triggered because Spider-Man's my boy, and I didn't.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't want. I say you don't have to look very hard. Also, hey, I think that's pretty good for getting to know you, Gwen Possible. Thank you for being on the show again. Hey, we had a quick question before we go into Souls about a really interesting thing that happens whenever you try to do SE sometimes with people. What's cool is. Gwen Possible said that she was interested in trying it out SE, and we were talking about like cool different ways that she can try it out, situated around alcohol, which I thought was awesome because that's it's just like this chill sort of like home bar situation. Is it something close to that? Am I getting that right?
Yeah. I was thinking about calling it SE After Dark.
Oh, that's so good. That's good. Put it on a t-shirt. Trademark it.
Have you had a chance to do any of it yet?
I did informally once, and it was really interesting. I think I'm probably going to have to stay away from people who are completely wasted and just...
Really good idea.
I also watch my own consumption at the same time.
That's
so.
Cool. It's balancing.
Sure.
There's a dynamic there, and I love it. But Larry also does SE. I do SE. SE, in my opinion, just to keep it simple, is a fun way of asking or having a conversational way of asking people what they strongly believe without turning the conversation into an argument or a debate. And I found it as a really cool way to just ask questions about anything to anyone. And we have a subreddit on reddit.com/street epistemology. And you can ask questions there. We'll go over them. I thought there was some really good ones. Actually, there's a bunch of new ones now. Oh, no.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's... Yeah.
And although Reddit is not a chat, whenever somebody makes a post, they can have people comment on the post.
There you go.
And ask questions about the post. So that's what I was thinking, that we might be able to to look at the post and see if people are posting to it.
Dude,
asking other questions, follow up. And
how
stuff.
How about we make the future episodes that? Because there's a lot
Sounds
of good,
good
conversations here. Yeah.
Yeah, we need a way to get feedback from the audience anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I think that'd be good. So yeah, check out Reddit. Check out r/street epistemology. We'll be here, Larry, myself, and a bunch of other people who are interested in talking to people about anything they want to talk about. And
sure.
You can post your questions there. We'll go over them. And there's a lot of them here. But a really cool one presented by a guy named Dirtnap.
Dirtnap.
The question was, what do you do if someone uses good and reliable processes but comes to a wrong conclusion? And I thought that was a good question. Like, what do you do when someone sounds reasonable but are still coming to something that's obviously yeah. wrong? And
I've got a pretty good example of that to take off a little bit.
Go for it.
Descartes, you know, says, I think, therefore I am, which is a very good start. you know, he comes to the conclusion that I have to exist because I can think my own thoughts and have my own, you know, conclusions from those thoughts.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But then he starts extrapolating on that, and he goes far afield immediately. He goes off into the supernatural and gods
right,
and,
yeah.
and spirits and all this other stuff. Hmm. So he started well. He had a good concept, but then he came to the wrong conclusions almost immediately.
Yeah, I am familiar with that because Descartes both had the argument for, hey, I exist, as well as also – God. And you're like, oh no,
right.
You took a little too far, guy, my friend. I'm sorry. But hey,
yeah.
that is a good start. Pat on the back.
Yeah.
But what do you do? How do you assess, or how do you tell them that maybe they should reconsider, or in that awkward situation, what can you do?
Yeah. Well, the thing I can think of is that point it out, and the reasons why the follow-up conclusions are fallacious. I mean, if you can't tell them why, then how can you show that they're fallacious? So you have to be able to do that. If you think they're fallacious, you have to be able to represent and give them the reasons.
The way I also think, like, for Descartes' rule, like, if you get confused as the person who's like trying to be convinced that this is actually true, that's Descartes' prerogative to better explain it, and until he does, that's his job until you can be convinced. It's not your job to prove him wrong. It's his job to convince you. And as long as you're like,
right.
hey, I don't understand that, please re-explain
right.
that to me until I get
it. He has
it.
the burden of proof.
Yeah, like, you have to explain that. You just can't say blah, 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 therefore I'm right. And if you don't get it, you're just silly.
Right.
It's like, no, you still have to explain that. If you want to convince me to believe it, please explain it to me better.
Yep.
I'll throw out something. And I actually think science is a good and reliable process that sometimes leads to wrong conclusions. And the great thing about science is that when you recognize something's wrong, that shows that you have a good and reliable process. So it's not a fault of the system when you come to a wrong conclusion. It's actually the sign that the system's working, because now you know something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's falsifiable anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, oh, okay, so I'm going to do this result, and if I'm right, it's going to be like this, but if I'm wrong, it's going to look like that. And you do it, and it looked like that. You're like, great, I learned something. I now know something went wrong. Now I can go back and try to fix this problem. I think there's this idea of, if you had, oh, I'm going to be really abstract here, but if you had a calculator, right, and you had a calculator that 50% of the time gave you a right answer and 50% of the time gave you a wrong answer, and you didn't know which one was, and then you had another calculator that every single time would give you the wrong answer, in my opinion, the one that gives you the wrong answer every single time is more reliable than the one that'll 50-50 get you right or wrong.
Right.
Because I know whatever this calculator says is not the right answer, so I can work with that. That's reliable, and maybe not necessarily as useful as one that always gives you a right answer, but it's still good, and it's still a good thing to have, to know, like, what does it look like when this is wrong? Oh, that's what it looks like when it's wrong. Now we know what the falsifiability aspect is.
Yeah.
Sarah, we might
be nice to know how wrong they were. I mean, it was always off by one, then it would be really useful.
Oh, then, yeah, that's perfect.
A random number than it would be.
No, like, if I had a calculator that was always off by like one exactly, I'd be like, oh, perfect. Now I know.
Yep.
Even though it's the wrong conclusion, I have a good, reliable way to like get very close to the answer. Then we just have to like fine tune it. That's, I feel like, is what the scientific method is right now. It's so, like, sometimes we may not hit the nail on the head, but we have a model that gets us pretty close and does a good job of explaining all these other observations that we're making to get like a nice coherent model of reality.
Right.
Gwen's possible. What do you got? Do you have an example of something, or have you ever had a conversation with someone where they seem like they're making sense, but they're coming to a completely wrong conclusion?
Yeah. Normally when that happens, I notice that what they're doing is they're leaving gaps in logic. So they'll take one logical conclusion and try to jump to another one. And so they're missing a step. Hmm. Like when someone says, oh, the earth must have been created, therefore God.
Hmm.
They're jumping a lot of steps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And they're leaving out an awful lot of other possibilities.
Right.
And then, I mean, even if they say it was created, therefore God, they haven't gotten any closer to proving it's their God versus the God of Hinduism or Islam or whatever.
Yeah.
They're leaving out all kinds of steps.
Yeah, so I would just ask them to try to fill in those gaps.
Boom.
And so I would probe them with questions to try to help them fill in the gaps.
And it's important for us to know what the logical fallacies are, because a lot of people don't. And if we're in this particular instance, there's several. There was a false dichotomy, you know, that it's either God or no God. Gaps in knowledge, the argument from ignorance. There's several logical fallacies there that we need to educate people on when they have faulty conclusions. And it's important, it's incumbent upon us to know the logical fallacies and be very familiar with them. We can pass them on.
Hmm. And then the top sweet icing layer on top of that is, not only are you able to recognize the logical fallacies, but you also know how to conversationally make the person aware that they're using them without just saying, hey, that's the argument from incredulity right there. Like, obviously that's
wrong. Especially if you use the argument from ignorance.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think you're calling them stupid.
Yeah, nobody likes being called ignorant, even when they are being ignorant. So it's like, how can you conversationally broach that subject? And I think SE is a really great way of doing that. It's not trying to Jedi mind control people or trick them. It's just helping them realize, hey, you can believe this for better reasons. And once you do, I'll believe it too. Let's get there together.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
All right. So we have the topic du jour. We do this about once a year. Larry, you have a saying at the end of every show that goes along the lines of, hey, don't sweat it. No one's ever been able to prove that a soul exists, right?
Right. Well, yeah. It's like everybody's going to somebody else's hell.
You gotta say that for us to say.
Because there's always somebody out there who has a different religious belief than you, and you are going to their hell.
Right.
Whether it's Muslim or Hindu or whatever. But this whole God question and heaven and hell question can be set back as long as we concentrate on whether a soul exists, whether we die or we don't die. And there's never in 2,000, 3,000 years, as long as religious has been pushing this idea of souls, nobody has ever... One, not only prove that they aren't, that they are real, but they have never even given evidence to that effect. There is no evidence out there whatsoever that we exist after the brain dies, after the body dies. And if we understand that, then we can take a look at all these religions that tell you where your soul's going after you die, and realize that they're really based on nothing. On conjecture and on wishful thinking about not wanting to die. So that's one of the things that I always like to come down on, and you know, say, how do we know we have souls? You know, never mind God.
I would only say the thing that's on top of that is the idea of a soul and what a soul actually is. And like whether or not we actually have them. I think when we started like this show, like way, 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 way back when, or like it's the one I jumped on, your position was there are no souls. But then you took more of like the agnostic atheist approach, which I think was really good. It's like, hey, there's no good evidence to believe in a soul. And I will wait until someone can convince me that there is one until then. But until then, I don't believe in a soul because there's no reason to. Like there's not even a candidate to start believing in it. So what I did was look up on Google for the last year of all of the best evidence that has come up for the existence of a soul. And let me tell you something. I found some really good stuff. I found some good lists. I think we're going to knit this nail on the head. We're all going to leave very ardent Christians by the end of the next 45 minutes. And this is the show that will be the testament of how we've all changed our minds and have come closer to God finally. All right. So
check... we have a recording. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We got the Checkmate Atheist right here. So I had sent, Larry, I had sent you a 12 point list. I'm actually bringing up some scholarly articles. Well, I would say scholarly, but they're not that scholarly. It has a scholarly name, and the people who write in the book are like PhDs, and they have a bunch of stuff after their letters after their name. But it's not in a peer-reviewed journal. It's just like Christian Science or Psychology Today, like soft science papers for the existence of like hard fact things. That said, doesn't mean that it's not true. So here's our first evidence for why souls exist. This is presented in a document or article called Peace of Mind from a New Scientific Explanation of Our Souls. It's written by Dr. Jeremy E. Sherman. His argument is that, as he says, the answer is simple and intuitive. Basically, inanimate things exist until they fall apart, but living things prevent themselves from degenerating. And there are systems that limit that that control that prevention of degeneration that inanimate objects do not have. Your body, despite being made up of like, you know, things that we call alive, but is mostly controlled by chemistry, will degenerate. But what's that thing that remains that keeps you trying to stay alive? What's that thing that can keep pushing you forward even after your body dies? That is the soul, regardless of whatever you call it.
Well, that's just a sheer claim.
Hey, let me at least get through the sentence. Call the different soul agency or the struggle for existence, whatever you call it, it's real, and it's something different and not related to chemistry. So there's your existence of soul.
Yeah, well, prove it. That's all I got to say. I mean, homeostasis is a biological structure system of the body that keeps it from deteriorating.
Exactly.
And science knows an awful lot about it nowadays. It is biochemical. And you know, to say that we have a consciousness, and an awful lot of these arguments for souls are based on the fact that we have consciousness and self-consciousness.
Okay.
But there's nothing that says that any of that would exist when the brain dies. The brain generates a consciousness. That's its job. That's how it works. And to conjecture otherwise requires proof. And all they're doing is making claims.
Let me go out on a limb. And Gwen Possible, I want your perspective on this too. Like, a chair is going to fall apart eventually. My body is going to fall apart eventually. But unlike the chair, I'm eating food. I'm going to work. I'm doing what I can to maintain a certain quality of life. The chair is just sitting there. It's falling apart. When it gets wet, it just molds and falls apart. When I get wet, I dry myself off. Clearly, there's something different between me and this chair. And obviously, you chop off my hand, now it's like a dead hand. You chop off my leg, it's a dead leg. It's just there on the ground. What is different about me versus that chair? It clearly seems to be the case that there's something inside of me that cares about prolonging myself, such that even when my dead body's gone, that thing could still be there. The chair doesn't have that. Isn't this obvious? Souls exist.
Yeah. Well, okay, so what I would say is that it's kind of like saying that there's something more than matter that defines you.
Yeah.
But I would have to ask you.
Why is it so special in the brain?
But I would have to ask you, do other mammals have souls?
Oh, that'd be a good question to ask this guy. I'm not sure. What would be the difference? Say there was a guy that said yes and another guy that said no. What would change in your approach? Or what would that lead you?
If he said what?
Say one guy said yes, they do have souls. The other guy said no, animals don't have souls. It's just humans. Like,
I see.
What would change in your route of reasoning?
So So then my next question would be, if the difference between humans and other mammals is self-awareness, then what can you say about humans when they don't become self-aware until they're around 18 months old?
Or maybe some, is it possible for humans to have like some sort of disability where they're not self-aware, or like maybe some injury where they lose awareness?
Or even there's like brain damage.
Yeah. Did they lose their soul then?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
If animals do have souls, is it only God that's drawing up a barrier saying animal souls don't go to heaven?
Yeah.
And human souls do? I mean, everything that has consciousness has a soul. Hmm. It's just up to God as an arbiter about who gets in and who doesn't.
What makes animals special? You know, crazy.
Or maybe there's an animal heaven too.
You know, maybe all dogs go to heaven. Oh, you took it before me. Dang it. We're going really off on a little bit of a tangent here, but you had mentioned homeostasis. I got my PhD in biochemistry, so I love that you nailed that definition so great. But there's also this really interesting thing that I thought was always really cool, in that plants are genetically more complex than animals, because we have cells that have DNA in them. They're inside the nucleus. That's where we make patterns for new cells to be made. But we also have this little thing in each of our cells as animals called mitochondria that are like, as people call them, like the battery of the cell. They power a lot of energy. They can take that sugar that you eat, convert it into like really useful molecules, and use that to like make and power a whole bunch of new productions for new cells. That mitochondria used a long, long, long time ago, used to be its own independent little animal, just or not animal, but like cell.
For lack of a better word. Yes.
Yeah, basically, used to be its own entity, just out in, you know, the primordial ether.
Chemical soup.
It has its own DNA pattern or assigned to it, and when you do like a birth, you know, genetic sort of assessment, what scientists are doing isn't checking your nucleus DNA. They're looking at your mitochondrial DNA, which matches very closely to your mother's DNA. It tends not to change as much compared to when you combine two completely different sets of DNA together, make a brand new person. The mitochondrial stays basically the same. It's basically your mother's DNA. And that's how you can trace back lineages of different kinds of people.
Right.
Plants have not only a nucleus DNA, but also mitochondrial DNA and a chloroplast-based DNA, which is a completely other different entity that's really good at taking sunlight and turning it into energy, too. So it's this really cool thing that every plant cell has three different sets of DNA, whereas animals only have two. And there are some, you know, really simple bacteria that only have one. So when you really think about it on the hierarchy of complexity, it's the plants that are kicking butt.
Well, wait a minute. There's one other thing that you didn't go into.
Oh, go for it.
Humans, half of our cells are not human.
What?
You know, we have these bacteria and algae and all this other thing that are part of our biome.
Yes.
That are not human. They're like invaders, but without which we could not live.
Oh yeah, it's
so
crazy.
You know, you could argue that humans or animals are much more complex than plants because of that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, I hear.
I have a question.
Go for it.
Is the oxygen in your body human? Is the water in your body human? Hmm. Just because it's inside of you.
Ooh, I don't know.
So, like, when I take a breath, is that breath human?
But those aren't living things.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it, but I could say, like, the oxygen that's fixed to, like, molecules in my cell, I would say, yeah, that's probably part of it. Because, like, I get stuff from somewhere to make me, right? Like, you are what you eat, right? So, to an extent, yeah, there's, like, a component where, like, the molecules that I absorb and digest and metabolize to make my body have now become a part of me. But I would say, like, there needs to be a chemical process before I draw that line and say, okay, now it's officially part of the human system versus just, I just put it in my body. I could always fit it out and breathe it out yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And what about all the living creatures that it went through before it got to you, those water molecules, et cetera?
Yeah, if you're in New York, every cup of water you drink is basically from another person. But hey, we're at the bottom of the hour. This is a good discussion. We'll come back to this after the break. This is 103.9 WOZO FM Radio. See you after the break.
Okay.
Out.
listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Five. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is June 30th, and we'll be talking about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK. Founded in 2002, we're in our 17th year. ASK has over 950 members now, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or you can go to Google and just search for Knoxville Atheist. It's that simple. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee, or RET. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET is bi-weekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays at the Goins Administration Building. Go to rationalist.org and click on Upcoming Events. Also, there is the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a few years ago and now has spread all around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. In Knoxville, they only meet once a month, however. That's on the fourth Sunday, down at the World's Fair Center or area in the International Building, or near it. Just do a search for Sunday Assembly Knoxville. Also, we talked about the Knoxville's Atheist Call-In TV show that's broadcasting every week. It's called the Free Thought Forum, and you can see it almost every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archive of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the radio or the TV show, just come to an Asker meeting or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. Speaking of guests, we have Gwen Possible on there. Hi, Gwen. And the usual show co-host is Wombat.
Wombat!
Hello, Wombat. So where are we going now, conversation-wise?
So just as a heads up, we're talking about souls. It's a fun topic, and we're going over the last year's best evidence for souls. We got Gwen Possible. Gwen Possible, you wanted to talk about some things. You had some questions about souls.
Yeah, I have lots of questions. One of the biggest ones, like centralized, is the soul your personality or consciousness or something else?
Well,
go for it. Hey,
a good question. I don't think they exist. So the answering that question for me would be like neither one. I've got a meme that I usually put up on the internet.
He likes his memes.
And I love my memes. I make memes all the time.
He makes memes all the time.
And this is a list of 25 claims that Christianity makes and doesn't follow up with at all. They just make the claims. They point to the Bible and say, that's the proof. But really, Bible is the claim. They're just repeating it. Hmm. And the first six of them has to do with the soul. The first one is that souls exist and everyone has one. Nobody has ever proved that. No evidence exists for that. The second one is souls can and do maintain or contain our mind, memory, and independent of the brain. Since nobody's ever proved one or had one to experiment on or test, that's just a claim. Third claim.
Are souls you going to do all 25?
I'm doing six.
Okay, good.
They're very short. Souls survive the death of our body intact. No proof, no evidence. That they will continue to live for an eternity is also another claim. No proof, no evidence. And that they claim that there are places for souls to go after they die or after we die. And the specific places, heaven and hell, actually exist. Of course, that's the claim. but each one would have to be separately proven, and no evidence has ever been brought forward to their existence. So that's six solid things right there that Christianity claims and never had bothered giving even evidence, much less for proof.
I would say, just to put on top of that, my answer would be, I don't know. And I think that's not just an out. I think that's the best answer until I can at least get a consistent answer from people who do believe in a soul. It tends to be the case when I ask different people what a soul is, I get very different answers. And if these are the people who know what a soul is and have these visceral experiences of neither near-death experiences or communicating with past souls or having a connection with their own soul, you know, if that is what their story is, it'd be helpful if they were at least telling me the same thing each time, because then I would have a better idea of what a soul is. But it tends to change per person to person. So until then, sure. I think I don't know is probably a good answer until it's
well, the time better. To believe something is when the evidence presents itself. If you don't have evidence for it, then why would you believe it?
Right.
And where would you stop believing? Leprechauns? You know, Bigfoot?
Hey, don't talk bad about leprechauns. I love Lucky Charms. Sarah, did I answer your question? What do you think? What could we do better to answer that?
I would have to talk to a believer, because I also don't think that a soul is a thing. I don't see any good evidence. So,
Well, what do you say about the near-death experience things that they always bring forward? How about the little boy that went to heaven and came back after his surgery?
Why do you everyone always picks on that little boy? He's already said, hey, I was lying. I apologize. I'm an atheist now too, guys. Calm down. He's one of the good guys now.
Yeah.
All right.
So when someone says they died and they had some sort of experience and they came back to report it, first of all, you got to understand that whatever you're experiencing, whether it be a dream or lucid reality, it's a function of the brain. And if you claim that you saw Jesus while you were, you know, floating above your body or something.
Blonde, you know, blue-eyed Jesus.
It's absolutely correlated to whatever religion that person already believes. So people who have near-death experiences and they believe another religion, they're going to see something that correlates with their religion.
Yeah, that's actually kind of interesting, because people's idea of what aliens look like were very divergent until, what was it? Visitors.
The 40s and 50s
where those alien movies came out, and you had the gray men, and now all of a sudden everyone's idea of what an alien looks like is based off that movie. It's very, you know, indicative.
We have a group
of
consciousness of it now.
It's in the, it's a meme. It's become a meme. Hey, I have the evidence that you guys are looking for. I was just waiting to like present it. Like, I love trapping people in logical missteps, because you guys are all like, there's no evidence for a soul. There's no evidence for near-death experiences. You're just looking for the science and you can't find it, yet I'm sitting in front of it right now. I'm about to blow this lid off in the journal Express, Home and Daily Sunday Express, written by Sean Martin. He writes, "Life after death, soul continues on a quantum level, scientists reveal." So the argument is the soul could continue to live on, but in the quantum scale after death. And scientists this is the proof you're looking for. I'm about to tell you. Scientists have claimed in what could be the strongest proof of an afterlife. So here's the idea. So what's going to happen to you after you die? Scientists have been worried about this. People have been worrying about this. We all agree it's a big deal. Death is a big deal, guys. But according to some well-respected scientists, and I quote, "Quantum mechanics allow for consciousness to live on following the body's eventual demise." This is how it works. Scientists in the University of Arizona, big school, right? They believe that the information that makes up a person, which we can call the soul, exists on a quantum level. They have this thing called protein-based microtubules that allow you to store human cell or human data. And when the cell dies, these microtubules store that data in a quantum state, such that when the cell dies, that information just goes out into space, right? But if you rebuild that cell, that information could potentially come back to the cell itself. And that is very exact of the soul model. It's very high level science, and I think it completely checks
it's high level something. It's, you
know, so like, here's the example, we'll put it in simple terms. Let's say, okay, Dr. Hameroff explains, let's say the heart stops beating and the blood stops flowing, the microtubules will lose that information of whatever that heart data was. That information is not destroyed, because information can't be destroyed. It just distributes out and dissipates to the universe at large. But if the patient is resurrected, revived, or brought back to life, that quantum information can go back into the microtubules, and the patient says, I had a near-death experience. Therefore, since people have had near-death experiences, and we know quantum science is a thing, we know that souls exist. Checkmate.
Well, the first thing that jumped out
checkmate
at me was, no.
Just admit that you're wrong and just be happy. We can finally be Christians. I mean, we're saved.
As you talk, my mind jumped from one thing to another that has absolutely no support in
it's
the real
simple,
world.
It's simple, simple, simple. It's quantum science.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the last things you said was information can't be destroyed. Yes, it can. Easily. I mean, you ever burn a book? Or tear up a piece of paper that had information on it that you could no longer get it back, shred it, burn it, whatever. Information can be destroyed. I don't know where he gets that. It just sounds like another claim. Gwen, any ideas?
Yeah. So I'm seeing jumps in logic.
Okay.
For example, they're saying that when the cell dies, the information transfers to the quantum level. How do they know that?
Oh,
they're just kind of saying that right, plainly. How in the world do we know that? So if you can't explain that, you can't jump to the other things.
Yeah, and what gets me was the very first thing he said was the scientists had discovered that, you know, a soul can exist. And then if that were actually true, these scientists would win the Nobel Prize hands down without any contest. I mean,
absolutely,
to prove something like that. And then he says later that, you know, microtubules could hold this information, and then they can transfer to the subatomic realm. I mean, those are huge leaps, like you were saying, huge leaps in logic. How do they get from one to the other to the other? And it's silly. But people will just believe it.
Can I butt in real quick? I have
certainly
two big things with this. I would say, because I've dealt with conversations like this before, I'd say there's a big difference between scientists say this versus science says this. Because, you know, a person can say anything, and even a well-respected scientist can definitely say things that aren't supported by science. But it tends to be the case that science is the better measure of what is, you know, closest to reality, or at least the best tool that we have to measure that. So, like, getting a scientist that agrees with you that says something completely crazy and says, like, well, he says, you know, volcanoes are actually rocket ships that can send us to, like, planet Jupiter. It's like, sure, he's a scientist, but what does actual science say? It's like, I've never heard of it. Like, you interview scientists, like, I didn't say that.
Right.
Don't put a microphone in front of me.
You've got to understand the science behind it, because if you just listen to a person without actually looking at the science behind it, that's just a big argument from authority.
Boom, there you go.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep.
So, yeah. That's perfect. That is the argument from authority when you say scientists rather than the actual, you know, thing that we hold at a higher degree of reliability, which is science. The second is an appeal to mystery. Appeal to mystery. Are you guys familiar with that?
Appeal to mystery, yeah.
It's when you answer one mystery of what happens when you die by appealing to an even bigger mystery that we're still trying to figure out, like quantum science.
Right.
And
where does lightning come from? So you appeal to God, which is an even bigger mystery, or Zeus, which is a god.
Like, I don't, it's true, very true. Some people would argue. But I would say if I don't know where death, what happens after I die, and I go to a brand of science that's still very obscure, or at least for most people is not very well understood, that is an appealing to a mystery, because we aren't quantum physicists, and the quantum physicists typically there's no model that explains what happens after you die, even in quantum physics. It's just a model.
Well, much less, much less a consciousness.
Ooh, yeah, that's rough.
I mean, consciousness that depends upon billions of neurons and a network of neurons in your brain. How would you fit those billions of neurons into a quantum micro scale? You can't. You couldn't even fit one. And then how would you have a consciousness, which is, you know, those are the basis of consciousness.
Yeah.
So it just makes no sense.
To summarize that argument, like, if consciousness is an emergent property of a bunch of mental and brain functions, how can you compress all of that to data as small as like a quantum of data, which seems to hold a much less degree of information? And it is necessarily a portion of something that's much greater. How can you get, it's like, I see a storm, let me get a raindrop. Now I have a raindrop, but that's not the storm. Like, something's lost in translation here.
Oh, I really like that analogy.
Yeah. I'm all about good analogies. Yeah, I get one a day. Sir, Gwen Possible, what are your thoughts on this? Final thoughts on this.
When it comes to the quantum level, there are people who can explain it, and those people have not come out and said, we have proof of a soul. So it's kind of like the thing I'll tell my mom. I'll say, well, as soon as I see it all over the news, we've proven it. We have proof of the soul. You know, you're not going to see, it's not going to be proven without it being big news for the whole world, you know?
I have a different...
Yeah, if you have to go to a guru to learn about it, then I would certainly question it.
I'm going to throw this one last one. This is the 12-point list that I sent, hopefully both of you guys. But there's a guy named Magis Center who says, listen, what is a soul? I can tell you proof that we have a soul based on what a soul is capable of doing. And then whatever you... like, just erase your biases of what a soul is to start with, and let me just explain to you what a soul is actually capable of doing. And the list goes, a soul is capable of giving us self-consciousness, giving us conceptual ideas, allowing us to find perfect truth, perfect home, empathy, perfect love, moral reflections, perfect justice and goodness, an awareness of spirituality to a transcendent reality, appreciation for things that are beautiful, the ability to see perfect beauty and have free will. Obviously, there you go. And the soul can do all of that. Therefore, that's what a soul is.
The brain can do all that. The mind can do all that. But to call it a soul, it throws a whole lot more baggage on it. That it would survive the death.
I'd even say a brain can do most of that. I think like some of those things that he injected in there, like finding a transcendent reality. If you're using God to define
number four, the recognition of the spiritual, sacred, numinous, transition reality or of God causes fascination, worship, and awe. I mean,
and obedience. I mean, don't forget obedience.
He hasn't proven half of that stuff to even exist. But you know, because the mind can conjecture it, he's saying that it's a soul that has to exist independent of the mind or the brain and the body.
So, like, what is the distinction between a mind and a soul? And if I took away the mind, does the soul still exist? I think Gwen Possible, you were talking about this before. Like, is the soul you, or is it just like an ID card that belonged to you? Is like not like my personality, but just like a ticket that I had. Like, what value is it if it's not my mind? What value is a soul if it's not who I am or me, my identity or anything like that?
Yeah, I know a lot of people that would say that your soul is your consciousness. And the problem with that is we already know a lot about consciousness, not everything, but we know that it's a function of the brain.
Right.
And we can directly link it to that. So some people want to believe in a soul because they have this strong sense of self. And they consider themselves unique, and they think, well, I can't just be just my mind. It can't just be my brain. I am so unique. And so that brings this level of, well, there must be something else. But there's no there's no good evidence to support that. And, you know, your feelings aren't really proving anything.
I would say, you know, right. Now that
feelings aren't facts.
Feelings aren't facts. As we're running low on time, I would just say, hey, I would be happy to know if a soul existed. Not whether I want one to exist or not. I'm trying to stay unbiased as far as that goes. But if one did exist, I want to know about it. And I'm just asking for good evidence to lead me to that conclusion. And I just don't think we have that yet.
Right.
What would you guys say as we get ready to wrap up this episode?
Gwen, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. We all know what Larry's going to say.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, sure. Basically, I want to repeat what Doubter 5 said, and that is that the time to believe something is after you've received good evidence for it.
Hmm. Hey, that's great.
Excellent.
Yeah, I love it.
Words to live by.
All right. Bet. I'd say, hey, thanks for joining the show. This was a really great conversation. And, yeah, if anyone has more questions for things like this, or if they have a comment they want to leave, go to reddit.com/streetepistemology. You can post whatever you want to anyone you want, or to an extent, as long as you're nice and polite. And we will be happy to answer in a really conversational way that won't be an argument or debate. Check it out. Larry, what do you got?
Yeah. Well, I got one thing. I've got an email address now for Ask an Atheist. So anybody have questions, they can send them directly to me at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.com. That's knoxvilleatheist.com. And the other thing is, never mind your search for a God. If you're so worried about God, think about soul. Do some research on that. If you can't prove souls exist, then the rest of it goes out the window. Anyway, thanks for joining us, Gwen. It was great.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Welcome anytime. Anytime.
See you next week, guys.
Okay. Take care. See you next week.
Thank you for having me.